This is CliffCentral.com. Thank you, Mr. Ronson, for
bringing us together this evening. Very nice.
We're going to go ahead and head over to the after party.
Mark Ronson with Mystical.
Feel right.
Damn straight. That's how we're feeling this morning. Feel good in this motherfucker. That's what they say. It is Wednesday morning. If you're wondering where Gord Laws is, we got a message that Gord is... What did he say? I didn't even read. I just saw that he's not coming. And
Gord had some client alterations.
Oh.
Some added demands and work he's dealing with right now. So okay. He only got to bed at around 1 a.m.
Oh.
And he also has to meet with client this morning, I think.
Yeah. I like that client. That client becomes someone who doesn't deserve pronouns. Or a definite article. The client. Yeah. It's never the client. It's client. I'm going to meet with client this morning. We're dealing with this one total asshole agency at the moment. I'm not going to mention their names, but they deserve to be called total assholes. And one day I'll tell you who they are.
Just assholes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And I don't even refer to them as client. I refer to them as assholes.
Asshole. Yeah. We're seeing asshole at
you see,
7.
The client themselves, the people who they work for, are great. But they are trying to make themselves important in this. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Have you ever written an email and then not sent it and just kept it in your inbox to make you feel better?
Yeah.
Or your draft item box just to make you feel better? That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, this is the horrible kind of conundrum people find themselves in. Agencies fulfill a purpose, and for a lot of the time, for structure means, because this is what happens when you start expanding. You have to have structures in place, otherwise you're going to just lose your shirt. And agencies fall into that.
Yeah.
But then that slows progress down. It slows a lot of flow down, and ultimately you're then stuck in the middle.
Let's go to Sean. Hey, Sean, what's up, dude?
Morning, guys.
Yeah, what's happening?
Oh, not much. It's Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Listen, well done on your new segment, that Blind History. It's awesome. Love it.
Okay, good. Thanks for the feedback, dude.
Oh, no, well done. It's great. Myself and the wife actually sat in the bar last night, and we listened to it again. Well done. You can make it a bit longer if you want, but good stuff.
No, I think 15 minutes is enough. I don't want to spoil you. I want you to leave wanting more.
Listen, Garrison, guys, I've had this thing on my mind for quite some time now. You know, with regards to where the country is economically and. Years ago, with the military, you know, you had to go, you had those 2 years that you had to do. And with unemployment the way it's sitting right now, I just thought to myself, it'll be a brilliant thing if they bring it back for a year or maybe 2 years. It's going to help with the unemployment, but then actually get these guys in and teach them. Besides, I mean, you've got different departments in the
DOD. Oh, I'm going to stop you right there, Sean. It's a shit idea, and I'll tell you why. First of all, conscription means that you don't get to choose. I also think that compulsory military service to this government would be a very bad idea. First of all, it's going to add to the wage bill because we've got to pay people if they go to the army. So it's not solving unemployment. It's making it worse for the taxpayer. The second thing is, I don't think our military is capable of passing on useful skills. We have the fattest and oldest soldiers in the world on average. And the reason for that is that it's sheltered employment already for a number of people who shouldn't be employed. I don't think our military are particularly effective at anything anymore. They're not going to teach anyone any basic skills. All you're doing is you're creating another catered deployment and sheltered employment area in the South African economy that we don't need, that we shouldn't have to pay for.
Yeah, I could argue with you, but that's going to take a long time. But
no, give me one good argument. No, come on. Don't cop out. Give me one good argument against what I just told you.
Well, you know, if you look at the DOD today, and I agree with you, you know, the skill isn't what it was, and it isn't all there. And I hear you saying that it's sheltered employment and. But if they rewrite the mandate of the military, which they can do, in terms of giving these guys support, you know, like police and even ESCOM, because you've got engineers sitting in the military anyway. They've got these forces and all that. If you utilize them in that way for the 2 years, in essence, you don't have to.
But
Sean, this is
all assuming that we can have competent people in charge running this program. I don't believe that there is anyone in the ANC who can competently run this. They've proven they can't run any of the parastatals properly. I think your idea is terrible. Plus, once you give military people control, it's very hard to get that back. And if you're going to deploy military engineers into parastatals and various other parts of the South African society that we don't need them in, I get very nervous. The minute you bring people into uniform into civil society, things get a little bit messy. You heard about Caesar crossing the Rubicon, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. Sean. We've all had a little round table in the studio. We've decided to strike your idea down for being crap. All right, thanks, man.
Guys, you must have a lovely day.
You too, dude.
It's an argument for another day.
No, you just lost. Just let's move on. All right, thanks.
According to you.
No, you lost.
All right, cheers, guys.
So, objectively. Listen, Sean, don't hold on to bad ideas. You've got a good brain. Use it for better ideas. Thank you. Bye-bye. There we go. There's Sean. That was quick and swift and to the point, I think. If anyone has a better argument, then bring it.
But can you imagine also, say they get it, they do get a youth group to come around and actually be competent, then the government would use it for other things.
Oh, it's just, it's a bad idea. Like, you don't want, those days are gone where you have to, like, put people into the army. What are they going
to
do?
Much smarter things to do with the resources.
Yeah, we don't even have enough working planes or tanks or guns.
No,
or,
I kind of get where he's coming from, is that if people have bugger all to do, right? Mm. The whole thing that idle hands do the devil's work is whatever Jesus said. Now, this is giving them a purpose, but that purpose needs to be repurposed, as in, how is it going to really benefit society?
Well, I don't know, but it's not in the military. I don't think that our Department of Defense has got anything going for it at the moment. I feel sorry for those people who are career soldiers and have put their life into trying to make the military work, but I think it's an under-resourced and politically insignificant part of the South African state infrastructure, and I don't believe that it has the kind of capacity or ability to make itself useful in any which way. I mean, didn't we deploy people into the Central African Republic a while ago because Jacob Zuma's nephew had a mine there? Mm. I mean, that's always a good reason to deploy our military and to lose the lives of good South African soldiers. And then we lost. We were routed in that country, and we were basically given the hiding. And I don't know that our military could defend us if we were invaded by Zimbabwe, frankly. So, would you want to add more people to that messy structure? That's like saying, let's employ more people in ESCOM. Not a good idea. Anyway, Sean, appreciate the idea. We always like hearing from you. If you have a good idea, bring it, and we will try to objectively figure out whether it's worth giving some extra thought to. And if it's rubbish, then obviously we're going to say that too. But that's how honest people and people who respect each other address things. They don't fill each other up with platitudes and ego building exercises. Let's turn our attention to a brilliant article that was written. There are very few non-brilliant articles that this man does. I've always enjoyed all of his writing. He doesn't hold back and he doesn't mince words. Let me just read you this to give you a very small taste of what Richard Poplack is busy with at the Daily Maverick at the moment. Unless you're a mining executive or a Basasa security camera technician, if Gwede Mantashe calls you for any reason, you know you're doomed. And yet, during his widely lauded and vastly under-criticized State of the Nation address, there stood President Ramaphosa boasting about the Minister of Mineral Resources calling him with some astonishing news. Last night, said the President, like a magician about to pull a lemon butter spatchcock chicken out of a carburetor, I received a call from Minister Gwede Mantashe, who told me that the oil giant Total would be making a big announcement today about a new world-class oil and gas discovery off the coast of South Africa. And Richard Poplack goes on to explain quite a lot about what was left out of the State of the Nation address, and particularly around this new find, which they're calling Brulpadda, off the coast of South Africa, new oil discovery. But the article is, in principle, a discussion of where the EFF is now. EFF, as we discussed a little bit earlier on, tend to be, whether they're elected in numbers significant enough to do so or not, the people who are setting the political agenda, particularly on the left. And Richard Poplack's written this brilliant article. I wanted to talk to him about it. Richard, good morning. How are you? Is he on the phone or on the... Skype. Richard, can you hear me? I've got Skype on here. It's not working. Am I doing something wrong? One second. Richard Poplack, are you there? Can you hear me? No, see, there's nothing coming through. Try it again. After I gave that really nice introduction.
It was, Gareth. It was a better one.
Jeez, I felt like, yeah. That's really good. Felt like I was putting a lot of work in there. Ugh.
It was so good, Skype had to then piggyback a bit.
So let me just quickly throw this in. On land, the president has stolen the EFF's policies, much the way the land was stolen in the first place. On the environment, the president said nothing, not one thing. In the United States, young leftists of color are presenting radical green plans and have establishment Democrats in a chokehold, and yet here, nothing. I mean, this is very, very interesting. So, Richard, are we going to try again? Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Ah, perfect. Thank you. I don't know what was going on there the first time. So, we love your latest article in the Daily Maverick, and it's mostly about the EFF. They are setting the agenda, whether the bigger parties like it or not. They're setting the agenda for the ANC nationally, setting the agenda for the mayor of Tshwane, the DA mayor of Tshwane locally. And they seem to be the only guys with ideas, whether they're good or bad ideas. But there's something about the character of the EFF that you've picked up that we should all be worried about, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been such an interesting journey following these guys through their political life. As you know, Gareth, I was one of the first people to take them seriously and watch the kind of trajectory of their arc over the past, I suppose, 5.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fascinating because effectively what's happened in this country, because the center is hollowed out, because the ANC and to an extent the DA, anyone who considers themselves a centrist or a moderate in this country, there are no ideas. And it's all been about conserving power, grabbing power, stealing power, and stealing. There's nothing in the center anymore.
Yeah.
So the fringe starts defining the political discourse, and that's exactly what's happened. The other thing to know about the EFF is that they're not the EFF. What they are is the ANC Youth League in exile, right? And if you know anything about the ANC, which you certainly do, it's that the ANC Youth League traditionally did set the agenda, right? In terms of the militancy of the organization, the ANC, in terms of the leftist radical policies of the ANC, such as any made it to light, the Youth League. That's traditionally how this party has functioned. And that's exactly what the EFF have been. As a party themselves, that's what they do. They sit on the fringe and they set the agenda. And it's not a particularly healthy position for a democracy to be.
Yeah, I'm curious also about their behavior, their actual physical presence. Wherever they go, they seem to be very easily spurred into violence. Julius has been firing off guns at rallies. You've got EFF members after the State of the Nation address actually punching someone. You know, it seems to me almost like, and usually this kind of behavior comes from a party that's a little bit desperate, not a party that seems to be totally in control. And these guys are winning in many ways. Why do they behave like they're losing?
I think they're lost. That's part of it. The other thing is that when Zuma finally walked into the sunset, or I shouldn't say sunset, he walked into his new music career, the EFF were lost, right? Without Zuma to focus on, they started to look pretty weak and pretty empty. Instead of focusing what they should have, which was Cyril Ramaphosa's weaknesses, bafflingly, they took this hard turn towards populism, racial populism, African nationalist populism. So when they took that turn, there's only a couple things you can do, right, before you start throwing punches. I mean, there's nothing really there. So that's exactly what happened, and I think when they were taking principled stances, like what Julius Malema promised to do at the beginning, getting last year, I believe it was the beginning of 2016, was to do sit-ins proper protests at APSA or FNB.
Yes.
Right? Now, that you can understand.
That's something poor people in this country can relate to.
Sure.
Right? What is a little bit weirder is smashing up a Vodacom store, because at the Vodacom Journalist Awards, they put up some posters that were disagreeable to the leadership of the EFF. Not racist, not even vaguely so. Mm. Not sexist, not hate speech, disagreeable.
Yeah.
For that, they trashed the Vodacom store, right? And the people screaming in the Vodacom store were black female workers, right? So what exactly is going on here? What you have is the traditional makings of, your regular sort of brown shirt party.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that way.
Well,
it really doesn't.
We hear that there are people. I mean, these are Vodacom's journalist awards, but journalists tend to be the guys on the front line a lot of the time when this stuff starts happening, because you can, if you manipulate the way journalists feel, if journalists are frightened to write about you, then you can manipulate them. And when political parties start doing that, it does feel a little bit like the brown shirts in Munich in the beer hall putsch of the 1930s, because that is where it starts. And people are throwing around this term fascist. I don't know who started it, but the EFF are really insulted by the term fascist. For some reason, they find that deeply disturbing. They don't find it quite as bad to be called socialists or communists, even though we've got this amazing example just across the Atlantic from us, where Julius's erstwhile hero, the late Hugo Chavez, and his brilliant policies have resulted in 2.3 million people having to evacuate that country en masse. And the ones who are left behind are eating their dogs and trying to feed their children leaves, and God knows alone what other depredations they've had to face in the wake of the implementation of pure socialism.
That's a pretty good warning of what an oil-based economy, an entirely oil-based economy, will lead you to.
So especially when
you mix in a whole bunch of toxic, non-functional policies.
Right. So in the introduction to this piece that I'm referring to in the Daily Maverick, which you wrote, you allude to the dangers of this oil find, because for politicians who are looking for a quick fix and any source of money, this could lead to more of these extreme ideas and to some replication of the terrible situation in Venezuela, right?
Or the replication of the terrible situation in Canada. I mean, anywhere where there's where oil or natural gas takes over your economy and starts to run it, leaving aside climate change. And I do want to speak about that, Gareth, because I think it's important, and I think it shows how bankrupt the EFF are in terms of a youth party or a party run by young people. But leaving all of that aside for a minute, the resource curse is a real thing. There is nothing at all to indicate that an ANC-run government in this country won't fall into the resource curse trap the second they open those doors.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the Business Day is gushing about a 1 trillion rand, natural gas and oil find off the coast. That's bad news for this country. I'm sorry, it just is. And you can call me what you want, but that's just bad news.
How could you
ahead of time decry the government for being incompetent or corrupt? That's totally wrong. It's not. That's just the way it's going to go. We all know it. It's a disaster.
And you know what? If government had a few examples of where they've run things properly, we would be a little more forgiving, right? I mean, if Eskom, let's say, was just running even at 50% of the capacity that it should be running at, and we didn't have stage 3 and 4 load shedding as we have in the last 2 days, maybe people would be more forgiving about giving the state a chance. SAA, Transnet, we can go through all of the examples. There is not one where government has run anything better than the private sector, or even run anything better at all. And I think people are just starting to lose faith in the idea that the state can manage anything at all.
Well, sure, there's that. But I mean, there's two other aspects. First of all, what has the private sector done in this country?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about total, right? We're talking about the French, Gareth.
Yeah.
Now, the French are, certainly in this continent, have been the most dishonest and the most corrupt actors you can imagine, right? Let's go back to Vodacom. The second there was you couldn't even call it political pressure, you call it thuggery. They bend.
Yes, of course. Right? Completely devoid of any courage.
Right, and even with ostensibly competent government, I we'll go back to Canada, which everybody loves. Everybody loves that guy, Justin Trudeau. Well, the Canadian dollar is pegged. It's pegged to the price of oil.
Mm.
Right? What does that do to your manufacturing sector? Marine oil and gas drilling is not a labor-intensive area. We need jobs in this country.
It's quite technical.
Right?
Taking
the rent, the price of natural gas and oil is a disaster. Destroys any hope, not that we have any, but any hope of redeveloping a manufacturing sector in this country. So, that's the one thing. And then on the other hand, there's the environment. And I bring the environment up there because this truly shows the EFF's bankruptcy, right? All over the world, young people are what politicizes, what drives them, mm-hmm. is this idea, this notion of climate change, this notion that there's a very good chance there'll be nothing left. And the EFF completely leave us on the table. They're not interested. Go ahead and look at their election manifesto. No. It's a joke.
Well, their election manifesto, let's just turn our attention to that for a second, because you do address it in the article too. The EFF's election manifesto is full of the most wonderful promises. I mean, everybody's going to have a house. Everyone's going to have a kitchen. Everyone's going to have a microwave. Everyone's going to have a car. Everyone's going to have a job. It's just fantastic. God alone knows. This is like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's New Green Deal, which promises that the U.S. economy will be totally off of fossil fuels in 10 years' time. I mean, it's fantastic. These people should be working with J.K. Rowling to write the next Harry Potter, rather than bothering with trying to write manifestos or deals of any kind. Is there any way at all that we should be giving this stuff any credence?
Look, the Green New Deal in the United States, I call a very different document from the EFF's election manifesto. What that's trying to do is drive a whole bunch of policies that are important to millennials into the mainstream political conversation in the United States of America, which does have a culture of debating these issues one way. And that's what's happening to the Green New Deal. It's going to go into Congress. It's going to go into the Senate. It will be churned up. But at least the conversations are out there.
Mm.
What the ANC, what the EFF election manifesto is completely different. What it's saying is that these are our policies. As what we describe ourselves as the government of waiting, should we win, this is what we'll implement. Now the question is, come on guys, an orthodontist in every school? An orthodontist? I mean, of all the things. So, and this is what is a bit crazy making is that 5 years of campaigning, and Gareth, these guys work hard, right? They're out there, they're doing their consultants. They don't sit on their butt and polish their Gucci loafers.
Yeah.
They do work very, very hard. And, and this document is built on the back of a consultant program,
mm-hmm.
right? But I mean, you can't just sit there and listen to people and write down what they say and put it down in a 179-page document and promise the moon when you know you can't deliver.
Yeah.
So if you develop an election manifesto, which you know you can't deliver, what's your plan?
Well, there isn't one.
Right? What do you do when let's say they win? All right? And then what do you do when people start talking back? Where's my orthodontist?
Well, you just go and you beat them up. That's what you do. I mean, that's what they'll do if Vodacom give too much credit to a journalist or to a poster that the EFF isn't comfortable with. You just beat them up.
We all know people who overpromise, Gary. They tend to be shady characters. And it's no different to the political party. I got to tell you, they're smart guys. I've known them for a long time. I've spent a lot of time with them. Looking at that document, it was like, okay. So the game is eventually they'll migrate back to the ANC and drive they've been very successful on the land issue. The land issue is the only thing that makes sense in that manifesto. That's the only thing that they've actually thought about, they've actually processed, and it's the one issue on which they will eventually change this country line. But everything else is nonsense. It's nonsense.
All right. Well, I love reading your stuff. Please keep writing and keep, what do you call it, poking the bear.
The bear shall remain poked, I promise you, Gareth.
Thank you, Richard. Richard Poplack from the Daily Maverick. You can read his column in the Daily Maverick this week. Poke the bear. That's what you got to do. What did we say on Canton's burning platform last week? Bell the cat.
Bell the cat.
Bell the cat and poke the bear. That's what we're learning today.
And hashtag no animal cruelty, though.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, not like in Russia where they make the bear to dance on a hot plate. So he dance.
Well, but it also, isn't it in Russia where the polar bears are attacking people?
Yeah, it's great.
See?
I think that's terrific.
Circle of life.
All right, we're going to check in with Christo from Coronation in a second. Of course, Coronation have got this brilliant idea where they are able to take some of your money and in all the legal ways, keep it away from the tax man and keep it for you. And we've spoken to Christo a couple of times. Leading investment house Coronation manages the long-term savings of millions of South Africans. And if you have the pension fund, or a pension fund, retirement annuity, or unit trust, they may even look after yours. There's a huge amount of financial expertise in a place like Coronation, and within their walls today, they want to help you to be smart with your money by showing you how to take advantage of what is essentially a gift from government. And when do you ever hear those words together, Ben? Never. A gift from government, investing tax-free. So let's talk to Christo and see what he can help us with this morning in our final segment, Coronation. Welcome again, Christo. It's very nice to talk to you. And I assume that we all get it by now. And if people want to hear any of this over again, you can go and listen to the first two podcasts. But basically, Christo helped us. If you have money to put aside every month, invest it rather than just save it with a bank. And if you're going to invest, go for the ultimate tax hack and invest tax-free. Have I got a good summary there, Christo?
Yeah, good morning, Gareth. I think you pretty much nailed it. It's so good to hear that the message is getting out there and that we are helping people save their hard-earned money in a more tax-efficient manner.
Could you explain briefly what you mean by an investment fund? I know we spoke about this the other day, but let's talk about an investment fund for a second.
Sure. So you've now effectively decided that investing on a tax-free basis is a good idea. Now you need to decide how to invest, what your choices are. And that's typically done by an investment fund. Mm-hmm. Those of us that perhaps are a bit more old school, you still hear the term unit trust thrown around.
Yes.
It's effectively an investment fund. And all that an investment fund is it's a basket of financial assets. So it's this big pool of assets that you buy into, you get an interest in that basket of assets. And that basket consists of all sorts of different asset classes, such as shares, bonds, property, cash, local and international. And really what it does is it allows you for a very small amount of money to have exposure to a large diversified group of assets. So for as little as 250 Rand in the case of Coronation, you can get your portion of, you know, some shares, some property, some bonds and some cash locally and offshore.
Okay. So what kinds of things do you need to know about yourself to make the first investment decision? I mean, what are the questions that we need to ask no matter who we are, where we come from, what we earn, what we've already got? What should we ask ourselves before we commit to this?
Yeah, so typically you are faced with quite a few choices once you realize that you now need to choose an investment fund.
Mm-hmm.
But really, if you break it down to its simplest form, you have two questions you need to answer. The one is, what are you saving for?
Mm-hmm.
And what we mean by that is, you know, what's the purpose of this money? Will it be for your child's future education? Will that education be an SA, or do you want them to have the option of perhaps studying overseas? Do you just want to build up a pot of money to supplement your income in retirement, for instance? Or are you simply looking to build up some kind of nest egg for, you know, when that rainy day comes? That's one key question you need to answer. And the other key question, and it's almost informed by your first answer, is, you know, how long do you have to invest for? So what is your time horizon? And if you can answer those two questions, then you can narrow down your choices really to only a few. It really does point you into the right direction to choose the right fund for you.
What is the Market Plus Fund that you guys operate?
So the Market Plus Fund is a great starting point for anyone who wants to invest for the long term via tax-free investment. So effectively what Market Plus is, it's a long-term growth-oriented portfolio that has a diversified angle to it. So effectively, once again, you get exposure to all sorts of asset classes, the majority of which are growth assets, those shares and property, and it is also internationally diversified. So it can have up to 40% of your assets invested outside of South Africa. So lots of flexibility, but keeping in mind the investor who's growth oriented for the long term.
All right. One other question quickly. Who can help people decide on what's the best course of action? Who can they talk to? I mean, what if you have a financial advisor? Maybe you can. So can you approach Coronation directly? What's the best way to do it?
Absolutely. So if you do have a financial advisor, we would definitely point you in his or her direction. Go and have a chat with them. Of course, if you don't have one, make sure you find a good independent financial advisor. Make sure they're qualified and that they're licensed with the authorities. That's very important. And if you feel like you just need to explore more, or you want to chat to Coronation, the best way to really do it is just go onto the web, visit our website. It's coronation.com, and we can help you from there.
Fantastic. I guess for first-time investors, they just want to know that they're putting their money in a safe place with some good people. So let's wrap up, Christo. Just correct me if I go wrong anywhere here. First of all, invest rather than save. That's preferable. Grow your money. Coronation has got this 250 Rand a month tax-free investment product, which you can check out and ask your financial advisor to check out for you. And you can axe your tax, which everybody, I think, is in favor of. In the current situation that we're in South Africa, if you can find a way to make your money work for you rather than be wasted by government, you should do so. I said that, not you. But that's basically the idea in terms of investing rather than saving, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last point I'll add is make sure that whoever you trust with your hard-earned money takes it seriously. If something sounds too good to be true, be careful and make sure that the people you deal with are licensed and that they have a track record of working hard to earn your trust.
Well, thank you, Christo, for sharing your valuable tax hack with us. It's good insight for everybody to know that they have the possibility to invest tax-free in South Africa. It really seems to be a no-brainer to make use of this free gift from government. And don't forget, Coronation is, to Christo's last point, an authorized financial services provider. If you're encouraged to put away any extra money you can for the long term, a culture of saving is so needed in our country. For as little as 250 Rand a month, you can invest in a tax-free investment with Coronation. Your future self will be grateful. All right. Thank you, Christo. That was interesting stuff. Okay, there are a couple of things in the news that we need to get to and a couple of things we need to talk about. We did speak to Richard Poplack in the last little bit. If you want to listen to that, you can get the podcast a bit later on. So, Ben, what's happening?
Gareth, I've got a big day of filming ahead.
What are you doing?
Doing some interesting interviews.
That's very good.
I'm taking my transformation star, Hobbo, to be panel beaten by a performance trainer. I'm meeting this guy, well, I've met him before, but today we're going to his actual gym. And this dude is like a conditioning coach of like, he's trained people in the army, he's trained rugby teams, he's trained like all kinds of sports teams around the world. Jeez. He's wow. Like, he's hardcore, but just such a great guy. And I'm taking Hobbo, who's 18 kilograms down, and I'm throwing him in here, and I told him to wear dark underwear today because it might get there.
Get sweaty.
It's gonna get hard. It's gonna get
Betty Swallocks.
Deep red zone. Deep red zone. So yeah, I've got that for today, which I'm quite excited about.
I started watching a new show. It's fantastic. It's right up my street. It reminds me of that brilliant series, 24. Do you remember that?
Okay, yeah, yeah, with Kiefer Sutherland.
This has also got Kiefer Sutherland in it.
Kiefer or Kiefer? Kiefer.
Kiefer, K-I-E-F-E-R.
Gotcha.
So Kiefer Sutherland is in this one. It's called Designated Survivor.
Ah.
It's brilliant. So it's about what happens if we just had the State of the Union address by Donald Trump. Well, imagine that that was bombed by terrorists. Mm. And everybody, think about it, your executive branch, your judiciary, and your legislature are all in one building.
Yeah.
So what they do is that Congress sends one or sometimes two people as designated survivors that are not allowed to attend the State of the Union address. They have to watch it from an undisclosed location in a secure place where they're not in connection or contact with the rest of people in Congress.
Okay.
So in this series, someone blows up Congress while the State of the Union is going on. And that means that all the justices of the Supreme Court are killed, most of the Congress is killed, the president and vice president are killed, most of the cabinet, and Kiefer Sutherland, who's at that stage the minister or the secretary of urban development and housing, he's the only guy who survives. So he becomes president, gets sworn in as president that same night. And it's the story, and I'm only into episode three, but it's the story of what happens in a situation like this. And, you know, it's got all that tension and it's got all that government intrigue. And I love it. I'm already so sucked into this show. I woke up this morning going, I've got to watch the next episode. Drives me crazy. This is where you need a weekend in the middle of the week just so you can binge.
I can't remember when last I felt about a show like that.
Yeah, I know. This one was, it's made for me.
Well, this is the weather for it, huh? It just doesn't stop raining at the moment. So, you know, El Chapo Guzman, our favorite.
Oh, he was sentenced, wasn't he?
Drug lord. Yeah, it's going to be life for lots of things.
Diamond studded gun. He has a whole property dedicated and built around killing people.
Yeah, it didn't go well. He pleaded not guilty, of course, to all his charges, but unfortunately he was found guilty of engaging in continuing criminal enterprise, international cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, marijuana, manufacture and distribution conspiracy, cocaine importation conspiracy, cocaine distribution conspiracy, international distribution of cocaine, use of firearms, conspiracy to launder narcotics. Jeez.
The guy's got a long list of charges.
It takes like a day to really physically, officially address all the things that he is basically now guilty of. But yeah, it looks like it's finally going to happen. He's going to get life and that's it.
Well,
hopes were low.
Poor old El Chapo. I mean, he wasn't looking at doing very much better than that when they found him and arrested him. And didn't he try to escape once as well?
Oh, he lives a fabulous life.
Well, not now. Now he's going to jail and it's not going to be so much fun. Although in jail, I don't know, do drug dealers have a good time or a rough time?
It depends, like, because it's all about being in the right cliques, really.
And if you have some money on the outside, people tend to look after you on the inside.
But what happens to the wives?
The
wives and girlfriends, because now El Chapo, I think the beauty queen Emma Coronel.
Yes.
I mean, Emma, what were you thinking? I mean, did your dad not tell you?
Stay away from drug dealers,
Emma. Stay away from the El Chapos. But no, I mean, like, you get caught up. You get all caught up in the game.
Yeah, I don't know her Instagram handle off the top of my head, but she has.
She was sharing so much.
Such a fabulous life.
She was sharing the El Chapo life so hard.
There was this one particular party they had at one of their homes for their daughters. It was all Hello Kitty themed. There was this like massive.
That sounds so suburban.
Life-sized Hello Kitty model build. It was all decked out in pink. Look, hey, you know, this drug dealing business gives you a lot of money.
Well, here's the CBS Evening News talking about the sentencing. And listen to this.
After 3 months of testimony and 34 hours of jury deliberations, Joaquin El Chapo Guzman showed no emotion as the verdict was announced.
Minutes ago.
Outside court, U.S. Attorney Richard Donahue claimed victory.
This conviction is a victory for the American people who has suffered so long and so much while Guzman made billions pouring poison over our southern border.
His nickname might be Spanish for shorty, but prosecutors cast El Chapo as a larger-than-life drug kingpin, at one time one of the world's richest men, yet a cold-blooded executioner. With testimony from 56 witnesses, the government proved to the jury that drugs and weapons were El Chapo's wares. El Chapo's defense team called just one witness and claimed El Chapo's role in the drug trade was overblown.
We fought like hell.
One of his attorneys, Jeffrey Lichtman, vowed to appeal.
But the fight is not over. We'll continue to fight for Joaquin Guzman until our last breaths.
But among the avalanche of evidence from the government, video showing seizures of massive shipments of narcotics, some even hidden in cans of jalapeno peppers.
Donald Trump is
loving
this.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah, jalapeno pepper cans.
If you are interested in this whole topic, there's this really great It's about 6-7 minutes on YouTube, so we obviously can't play it for you, but Vox, one of my favorite YouTube channels, there's a thing they put together called America's Cocaine Habit Fueled Its Migrant Crisis.
Oh, yeah?
And they really get into it and how drugs coming from Colombia and those countries around the Andes coming into America via Mexico has also just kind of destroyed Guatemala and Honduras. So these drugs have to go different places, right? And every time drugs come to a standstill, people are getting bribed, people are getting killed. People are, like, the thing about drugs is it's not just like Johnny wants to have a party on Saturday and he just calls a guy. The stage and the people's lives that come in contact with the eventual end product is fascinating. And ultimately, there are no real winners.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about this before. And largely, I think, on this show, we tend to espouse the point of view that this stuff should be legalized or at very least decriminalized. I mean, this is what's happened in Portugal. And it's worked out really well for them. Half the number of people that were on heroin before legalization are now still on heroin, and people are treating it as a disease. So you're treating people like patients rather than like criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go after the dealers, they don't go after the users.
Mm.
And it seems to be working in Portugal. They seem to have been able to pay for this program by converting what was 90% of their spend in law enforcement into 90% of their spend in healthcare, and 10% of their spending used to be in healthcare, and now that's in law enforcement, and it seems to be working. But that's for Portugal, much smaller country, obviously different set of rules and standards. But I wonder in South Africa if we shouldn't think about that too, and if America shouldn't consider ending this stupid war on drugs. It's cost a fortune. People are not using less, they're probably using more.
Well, it's just a kind of tit for tat thing. Nothing's really changing.
And the people who are going to use no matter whether it's legal or not, yeah. Right? So I think there's got to be a better way to do this.
There's got to be a more progressive way of doing it, because you've seen one rig gets stopped or shut down, another one opens up, and the exact same process happens.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about Merca.
Merca, yeah.
You know, the 2020 presidential election is just getting more and more interesting by the day.
Yes.
And because politics 101, it also gets funnier by the day. So one of the big contenders is Senator Kamala Harris. Have you heard her name around?
Kamala Harris, yes.
So I think this is so stupid. Go on. She's trying to be down with the cool kids and
sound,
you know, hip and happening to garner more votes.
Sure.
So she...
like Hillary did when she went and ate hot sauce. Do you remember?
Exactly.
You see Elizabeth Warren, that Pocahontas.
Yes.
You see her, she's trying to appeal to people by having a beer in her kitchen and recording a video for YouTube. It's the most awkward thing you have ever seen in your life.
You can just see through the fakeness of it all.
They're trying to look like they're one of the people. So what's Kamala Harris done?
Interesting that you bring up the Hillary example, because Hillary made the hot sauce announcement on The Breakfast Club. This is like a hip-hop show in the States.
Oh, right, okay.
And it's hosted by these black hip-hop, black and Latino hip-hop heads.
Cool.
So even the mere fact that Hillary was on a show like that, you go, okay.
Yeah. Well, yes. She's obviously, like, this is a serious attempt to get the black vote.
Yes. And so Kamala Harris is trying to do the same thing as
well. You see, people on the left believe that all black people think the same.
So then
you can get the black vote if you just seem to be credible and authentic and you care about black people.
Mm.
This is the kind of patronizing shit that goes on the left. All right.
So on the show, she made the announcement that I actually used to smoke marijuana in college.
Oh.
Oh, what a... what an amazing
but
down
then
with the people.
Didn't she become a state prosecutor in California later on and bust people for smoking pot? So it was okay for her at college, but then she's putting people in jail after that as state prosecutor. Great move. So which are you for, Kamala Harris, or are you duplicitous? Do you talk to a certain audience, young black people, a certain way? I smoke pot. I'm so cool. I'm so normal. And then when you're in your job as state prosecutor, you're putting young black people in jail for smoking pot.
even the way she said it, she says, I inhaled. It's like, no, people who smoke weed don't say that. But regardless, this is when it all crumbled down, excuse me, and was a big lie. They asked her, because in line with the show, they asked her, so what sort of music were you listening to when you were smoking weed in college? And she said, very innocently, I was listening to Snoop Dogg and Tupac.
When was she in college?
In 1986.
She listened to one Snoop Dogg song.
When Snoop Dogg and Tupac were not even on the scene yet.
So she's making this up. Yes. She's like Hillary with a hot sauce, only worse.
She's not just picking rappers' names out of the air.
I mean, this is outrageous. You know?
Idiot.
At least, I got to give credit. Like, Bernie Sanders may be a crazy old Muppet, but the guy isn't trying to be a young, cool black dude. Kamala Harris, she's like one of the I shudder to say it because there's very, very low level of talent, but she's one of the better Democratic presidential candidates because she's got a little bit of a record as a state prosecutor. Like, you could see what kind of work she did before. And
there's some sort of clout.
Well, she should be proud of that, but clearly she's trying not to be. She's trying to seem like she's cool because she's got to compete with the rest of those young Democratic Congress people who've just been elected.
I'd love to know what her favorite Snoop Dogg song is. I bet she says Who Let the Dogs Out.
She probably was just like, what do I say? Oh, yeah, Snoop Dogg and Tupac.
So she graduated college in the 80s.
Yeah, she was at Howard University and she graduated in 1986. And if you look at that time, Run DMC was actually the biggest hip-hop act in 1986. Snoop Dogg only released his first album in 1993.
Yeah.
And Tupac released his first album in 1993.
She doesn't know anything about rap music.
No.
She's never listened to hip-hop. She's never listened to rap. And she's
probably
on a show.
She hasn't even smoked before.
If you're going to lie about this, try to look cool, then do your research. While you were high, you were listening to Snoop Dogg. Only Snoop Dogg didn't exist at that time.
Yes. And then this is what I love even more. Now her team is scrambling to find a way out of this. So a rep for Senator Harris said that actually the comment was a miscommunication.
Oh, sure.
This is their official statement. They said, when Harris replied, definitely Snoop, she had been responding to the question of what music she listens to now.
Oh, God, do we care? Because she's going to lie about that as well.
This is so stupid. How they're trying to play the game and they aren't winning with it.
Let's see how authentic she sounds when she's doing it because I don't know. I mean, maybe
also,
she...
And I know the answer to this too. They say you oppose legalizing weed.
That's not true.
I know.
and look, I joke about it, half joking. Half my family's from Jamaica. Are you kidding me?
Again, trying to scramble.
I mean, I can claim a quarter of my family's from Jamaica.
And you're right.
And I don't smoke weed. Wow, that's a Hillary kind of laugh, isn't it? All right, let's give her a chance. All right, here we go.
They'd be so mad at you. Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like I inhaled. I did inhale. Okay. It was a long time ago. But yes.
I know you have to go. They say you have to go. I just
broke loose.
I mean, was it in college? Uh-huh. See, I like stuff like that. That's a real honest answer. Was it a blunt or a joint?
It was a joint.
Hey!
Yeah.
You remember the high?
I do.
So if it was legalized all throughout the country and medicinal, would you, you know, do it?
Listen, again? I think that it gives a lot of people joy, and we need more joy.
We need more joy in this world.
Sounds like she's high right there. Anyway, she did say the Snoop things after that. I'm not going to play the whole thing because it goes on for too long. But what a thing that, you know, in order to try to connect, you have to say that you smoked weed. No. And it doesn't sound to me like she ever smoked weed. Mm-mm. She sounds like she was a goody two-shoes the whole way through college. That's how she ended up in the state prosecuting office. I don't think that this woman can be believed. Just no, like Elizabeth Warren when she claimed to be...
forget
like,
about her instantly.
Elizabeth Warren claimed to be Native American. Hillary claimed to like hot sauce. Just, you're not authentic. You're not real. You people are pathetic.
I'll tell you what, Israel.
It's so cringe.
say what is real and worth knowing about. Lonely Island are going to make a movie about Fyre Festival, basically.
You know, actually...
this Fyre Festival, really, Ben, I wouldn't have even known it existed if you hadn't told me. And I watched the documentary.
You would have heard from the Netflix thing, which is so good. And everyone's been talking about it because everyone's watched it.
This is what we didn't think we needed, but now that it's here, we need.
So Lonely Island, okay, we all know what that is. They made those amazing spoof songs and they do a lot of things, like interesting kind of skit stuff. And Seth Rogen, who we also like. Obviously, very funny guy, also smokes a lot of weed, but he's a genuine comedian.
Mm-hmm.
They're teaming up to make basically a Fyre Festival kind of movie where there's this amazing music concert. The best party ever is until that doesn't actually happen. And they're kind of in production right now. They haven't given any more details other than the fact that they are currently putting this together. This is going to be really funny. But then again, I was thinking, like, because Fyre Festival was such a joke to start with, how hard is it going to be to get genuine comedy out of this? Because, you know, like when something's completely ridiculous, it's very hard to spoof.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all going to have certain things. And they really want to get the guy who almost had to suck a cock for water.
Andy King.
They want to get Andy King in the actual movie now.
Well, that meme has gone everywhere. Yes. Anytime anyone is asked how loyal they are to their job and how much work they're prepared to do to make things happen and will they go the extra mile, that guy's picture comes up.
Yes.
Because he's become employee of the decade.
He's the face of dedication.
I mean, the guy would do anything to make this Fyre Festival happen. What a mensch.
More like dedication, Ben.
Wouldn't you hire him?
No, I think he's too emotionally scarred. I don't want to be around people like that.
Do you know what is the funniest thing about this Andy King meme in my eyes? Is the fact that he said it so innocently. And I didn't think he realized how big it would be. You know, he's this guy with the cardigan, middle-aged.
Yeah.
I watched an interview of his. He didn't even know what a meme is. He's not on social media much. Because one of his friends was actually telling him, like, yo, you are trending. And he says, what is trending? He said it so innocently. He was just retelling his perspective.
Life's about to get a whole lot more complicated.
Like, I walked into that office and I was ready to suck some dick.
Can you imagine Andy King and Alan Ford having a conversation?
That would be the best interview ever.
That would be such a great interview.
We need to actually make that happen.
So, when are they going to release this movie? Because they're going to move quickly. People are going to lose interest.
Yeah, it's true. It has to come out quite quickly. Look, with these movies, they don't take a whole bunch of time.
Okay.
Mostly shot in relatively low budget.
All right. Let's do it. Sounds good. Okay, that's all we got time for this morning. We will catch you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Don't forget tomorrow, The Burning Platform with Canton Pele and Pumi Mashiko, among other things. That's brought to you by Nando's. Loads of other good stuff on the lineup for today, cliffcentral.com. And if you want to find any of the podcasts, you can do so by going to our website, look up the series you care about. Launched two new series this week. We launched last week, World Cancer Day on Monday last week. We launched a brand new series brought to you by Discovery on oncology. So if you know someone who is going through that battle with cancer, if you yourself have had to deal with it, if someone that you care about, someone you know is struggling, frankly, with who to talk to, where to get information, how to deal with this psychologically, let alone medically, you should listen to this podcast series. There hopefully will be some tips, some really useful hint in there that could give someone a lifeline and help them cope with this very difficult situation. And then the other one that we launched yesterday is Blind History with Taylor Blinds and Shudders. That's basically a 15-minute crash course into some of the most interesting people in history. We started the first episode with Alexander the Great. There are a bunch of other cool ones coming. Stick around for those and a whole lot more. It's time for the unnews. Are you ready for the unnews? That's the question.
Yes, Gareth, yeah. I am.
Good stuff, Ben. Another day of load shedding is set for a disgruntled South Africa. Disgruntled South Africans who are considering starting tax shedding. It's quite simple, really. It's a domino effect that could happen any day now. And, of course, not completely unthinkable, seeing as criminals in this country have been at stage 4 tax shedding for quite some time now. Pravin Gordhan has, however, said he's working on the Eskom situation and that he's going to bring in foreign experts. The plan has been hailed as revolutionary, as Eskom hasn't had an expert since Brian Molefe, who was the only expert in lying. And then finally, Sri Lanka start their test tour of South Africa today, and hopes are at an all-time low with regards to being competitive against a strong Proteas team. Now, the new Sri Lankan captain, Bitofa Bad Batsman, says that his team shouldn't be written off completely. However, new stars Grower Not Shower and Shin... Shine him till he's silver. Represent a new god in their team and may surprise a few people. Those names are true, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, watch out for growing out of Showa, fast bowler, big tall guy. And shine until he's silver is a wicketkeeper.
All right, very good. Have an excellent time in the company at cliffcentral.com. Don't forget, tomorrow's Valentine's Day, so you've got to be ready for that. Oh, yes, big, important day for a lot of people, especially those in relationships or those who want to get into a relationship. You better be paying attention. You miss this opportunity, no one's going to date you ever again as long as you live.
Wow.
Alone for the rest of your life. Think about that.
Listening to NXS.
Exactly, this song. Being miserable. Jeez. A rope in one hand. Oh. A dick in the other. What happened to Michael Hutchins?
This is CliffCentral.com.